Romans chapter 2, we want to pick up at verse 17 in just a moment. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. To bring us up where we're at in our context, we'll pick up with our comments about verse 21, where we ended last Wednesday evening in our study. But remember, in the first chapter, Paul dealt with the condition of the Gentiles before God. They were in need of justification or salvation. They were guilty of sin before God. In chapter 2, he began to speak to the Jew, referred to him in chapter 2 and verse 1 as old man. Remember, that was a figure of speech, an apostrophe. He's not literally present, he's absent, but Paul is speaking to him as if he is there as he's writing this epistle. Of course, he identifies this one whom he's speaking to later on here in chapter 2 and verse 17 as a Jew. Indeed, you're called a Jew and rest on the law and make your boast in God. So he's speaking to the boastful Jew when he says, O man, the Jew that prided himself in the fact that he was among the people of God. God had chosen his nation as his people. God had given them a written and codified law. He had treated this nation of people much different from all other nations of people upon the earth. The Gentiles, of course, did not have a written and codified law, but that did not mean they had no law. Remember, from the time of Adam and through Noah and down through Abraham and to the time of Moses, God spoke directly to man. So he gave him his word through speech, and it was passed on from generation to generation. You might say it was a verbal revelation and passed on from generation to generation. Not only did they have that knowledge of God's will for them in their life, but they also look upon God's creation and know that God existed and know that certain things in nature were in harmony with God's will. They knew that there was a divine creator, and they knew that making a god out of stone or out of wood was not in harmony with nature. And so they recognized and realized to worship a piece of stone or worship a piece of wood would be idolatrous, especially in light of the fact that there was a divine creator evident in the creation. And so in chapter 2, as Paul speaks to the Jew on this occasion, the Jew thinks he is, you might say, better than the Gentile. The Jew doesn't see himself as a sinner and in need of justification of salvation because he's God's people. He's been given a written and codified law and many other things that he would pride himself and boast about. Let's pick up at chapter 2 and in verse 17 and read through the end of the chapter and pick up with our comments about verse 21. Indeed, you're called a Jew and rest on the law and make your boast in God and know his will and approve the things that are excellent, being instructed out of the law, and are confident that you yourselves are a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, having the form of knowledge and truth in the law. You therefore who teach another, do you teach yourselves? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal? You who say, do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who make your boast in the law, do you dishonor God through breaking the law? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you, as it is written. For circumcision is indeed profitable if you keep the law, but if you're a breaker of the law, your circumcision has become uncircumcision. Therefore, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteous requirements of the law, will not his uncircumcision be counted as circumcision? And will not the physically uncircumcised, if he fulfills the law, judge you who, even with your written code and circumcision, are a transgressor of the law? For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, And circumcision is that of the heart, and in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. Back in verse 17, we're going to pick up with our comments at verse 21. But to introduce the comments at verse 21, verse 17 through verse 20. Indeed, you're called a Jew and rest on the law. Now, we spoke about these passages last week. We'll not spend too much time on them. We need to move ahead. But you're called a Jew. They prided themselves in being Jewish. They were the people of God. They were of the tribe of Judah. They were those whom was known as the nation of Judah. And after the divided kingdom, all those of the tribes of Israel came to be known as Jews. So when we come to the New Testament time period, regardless of what tribe one was from, he was referred to as a Jew. And that was something they prided themselves in. Even Paul, from the tribe of Benjamin, refers to himself as a Jew. Not only did they pride themselves in their Jewish heritage, but they rested on the law. That is, the law was something they took great pride and glory in. Their written and codified law, because God had not given any other nation of people a written and codified law. So there's several things mentioned here that we talked about last week that we'll not get into, that they prided themselves in. All of these things, knowing His will, approving the things that are excellent, confident that you're guides to the blind, spiritually blind, a light, spiritual light to those who are in darkness. So they prided themselves in this. They saw themselves as above others, you might say. And so he comes to verse 21. Verse 21. And verse 21 through verse 23, Paul asks a series of rhetorical questions that simply show the folly of the claims of the Jew in relation to their practice. You, therefore, who teach another, do you teach yourself? Now, the inference is, no, they do not. Remember, they were teacher of the babes, those who were spiritually immature, those who had a lack of knowledge. They were guides to the blind. But they didn't teach themselves. When we teach the Word of God, or preach the Word of God, what we preach and teach should match up with that which we do. And so the Jews did not do that. So it's contrary to common sense that the Jew would claim to be the source of spiritual enlightenment when, at the same time, he did not learn to practice that which God commanded in the law. You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal? The implication is, they stole. They preached against stealing. They took the old law and they taught against stealing, but they still stole. You see, Paul's point in this chapter is to show and to prove to the Jew that they're just as guilty as the Gentile. They're in need of justification or salvation as well. But the Jew doesn't see himself that way. Romans 2 in verse 22. You who say do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? Well, the implication is they did. Adultery was one of the sins of the Jews. They knew the law taught against it, but yet they committed adultery. Has anyone come to your mind among the Jews who did that, who knew that it was wrong? What about David? David knew he was wrong when he committed adultery, but he did it anyway. And so did Jews in the first century. They taught against it. It was contrary to the old law, but yet they engaged in it. You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? So abhor means to find repugnant, detestable, loathsome. God found idolatry, loathsome, detestable. It would make him sick at his stomach. And God condemned idolatry in the old law. As a matter of fact, God even forbid the Jews to take a carved image or an image overlaid with coal, gold or silver, and melt it down and even take the silver or the gold from the image. It was cursed in the sight of God. It was to be destroyed. But yet, you who abhor idols, they would teach all day that idolatry was loathsome to them. But what would they do? If they had an opportunity, they would slip into an idol's temple and take the image. Perhaps take it home and set it on the shelf. Take it home and melt it down and get the gold or the silver. They would plunder the temple and take of the accursed things which God forbid them to do. Yes, they would rob temples. Romans 2 in verse 23. You who make your boast in the law, do you dishonor God through breaking the law? Now, some Bible versions do not render this as a question, and it may have been, of course, a statement instead of a question. The English Standard Version renders it as a statement. It just simply says, you who boast in the law dishonor God by breaking the law. And it might be to be understood as a statement instead of a question. So you who boast in the law, you who take great pride and glory in the fact that you have a written and codified law and no other nation has it, you who boast in the law, you dishonor God by breaking the law. You dishonor God. You act shamefully before God and you treat Him with contempt and shame. You disregard and violate the law, and by doing that, you dishonor God. You insult Him. He gave you the law to govern your life, and you take great pride in it, but yet you'll not obey it. Romans 2, verse 24. Romans 2, verse 24. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. Now this verse, of course, is a quote here from Isaiah 52. Isaiah 52 and verse 5. Now if you have an opportunity, you might go and read or study that in the context. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. That was spoken by Isaiah in regard to the people of Israel or Judah being taken away into Babylonian captivity. And so the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. Think of this. Here we have the Jewish nation. They have a national God, Yahweh, Elohim, Jehovah. And they're taken away into Babylonian captivity. Well, what God's going to allow that to happen? Their God's not very powerful, is He? The Babylonians overcame the nation, destroyed their capital city of Jerusalem, destroyed the temple and laid it waste, took them away into the Babylonian captivity. What kind of God is that that would allow His people to be taken into captivity? Not very powerful. And so God would be blasphemed among the Gentiles because of that. But of course, God brought this about because of their disobedience, because of their unbelief. So, in that context, in Isaiah 52 and in verse 5, Paul makes application to it here. The same kind of disobedience that existed in Isaiah's day and the time in which the Israelites were taken away into Babylonian captivity exists now, Paul says, among the Jews. They're so disobedient and obstinate toward God and toward His law, they will not obey it. And so God is blasphemed. In ancient cultures, one's name was embodied in the whole person. To speak of one's name was to speak of his character, all the qualities that he exhibited in his life and in his character. To speak of the name of God is simply to speak of God Himself. So the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles. That is, God is blasphemed among the Gentiles. Blasphemed means evil spoken against. Evil spoken about. That is, His reputation as a God who protects and cares for His people is destroyed, as it was destroyed in the eyes of the Gentiles when the Israelites were taken away into Babylonian captivity. So the Jews portrayed themselves as the people of the law, being recipients and guardians of God's law, which He gave them, but they simply did not keep it. And because they did not keep it, God is evil spoken about. He's blasphemed among the Gentiles. So the bottom line of this paragraph that we just considered here from verse 17 is that the Jews forgot about appealing to the law in any way as the basis for their hope on the day of judgment. Or they could forget about it because they weren't keepers of the law. Remember, they prided themselves in the fact that they had the law. They gloried in the fact that they were a own nation of people upon this earth who had a written and codified law from God. But that law did them no good. Why? Because they didn't keep it. Now think about that for us today. We have the law of Christ. Having the law of Christ does us no good whatsoever unless we keep it. Now, we could be like the Jew. The Jew kept some of the law, but he didn't keep all of the law. The Gentiles, remember, as we studied about earlier in chapter 1, they kept some of the law. They kept some of the law even though they didn't have the law, the written and codified law. They did some of the things contained in the law. They did it because they knew it was the right thing to do. All Gentiles did not worship idols. Some did. But those who did not worship idols recognized that idolatry was wrong. All Gentiles did not commit adultery, but some did. All Gentiles did not steal, but some did. Those things were condemned in the law of Moses. The Gentiles did some of the things contained in the law of Moses, but they didn't do all the things contained in the law of Moses. And they would be judged based upon the law that they had. That is the law that was given to them by word of mouth and passed down from generation to generation. But the Jew has no excuse, just like the Gentile, because they've been given a written and codified law, but they have not kept it. They have not kept it. Romans 2 in verse 25. Having been given the written and codified law, they prided themselves in that, but there was something else they had great deal of pride and gloried in as well, and that is the sign of circumcision. Now remember, circumcision was given before the law of Moses was given. It was a covenant that God had made with Abraham. You go back to Genesis chapter 17. Before Abraham even had a son by Sarah, that is Isaac. The only son he had was Ishmael. But God made a covenant with him. And that covenant was the covenant of circumcision. And a year from the time he would make that covenant, Sarah would bear a son. His name was to be called Isaac. But on that occasion, when God made that covenant with Abraham, Abraham himself was circumcised, along with Ishmael. And everyone in his house, every male in his house, even those he had bought as slaves, if they belonged to the house of Abraham, they were circumcised. It showed them to be in a covenant relationship with God. And so when we come to the New Testament time period, we know from the old law that that covenant was passed on in the law of Moses. And when we come to the New Testament time period, the Jew really prided themselves in circumcision. They really prided themselves in circumcision. If you could remember all the occasions in the book of Romans, the book of Galatians, the book of Acts, where Paul had to deal with Judaizing teachers. Remember, Judaizing teachers are those who were Jews who had been converted to Christianity. They'd been converted to Christ, but they were still holding to the work of circumcision. They were still holding to that work of the law of Moses as a means of justification or salvation. It showed them to be in a covenant relationship with God. Paul had to deal with those folks over and over again to show and to teach that it wasn't physical circumcision that brought you into a covenant relationship with God, but that's what the Jew thought. And so it is brought up in our context here in Romans 2 and verse 25. It's another thing that they boasted and gloried in. So Paul says, "For circumcision is indeed profitable if you keep the law. But if you're a breaker of the law, your circumcision has become uncircumcision." So in verse 17 through verse 24, Paul showed how inconsistent and guilty under the law the Jew was. And now he begins this verse with "for," that is, because. It gives a reason. Circumcision is indeed profitable if you keep the law. It's advantageous, it's helpful, it's beneficial. For circumcision is indeed profitable if you keep the law, if you observe the law, if you obey the law. Circumcision is profitable, it's advantageous.
And Brother James, this goes to not just necessarily the physical thing of circumcision, but the circumcision of your heart. Deuteronomy 30, verse 6, "And the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thine soul, that thou mayest live."
Yes, absolutely. And he's going to bring that out in the following context, but remember, the Jew that Paul is speaking to, the physical Jew, physically circumcised, he put great pride and glory in the fact that he was in covenant relationship with God by circumcision. But the point that Paul makes here, well, circumcision is indeed profitable, beneficial, and advantageous if you keep or observe or obey the law under consideration, the law of Moses. It required circumcision. But if you're a breaker of the law, if you're a transgressor of the law, if you're a violator of the law of Moses, your circumcision has become uncircumcision. It's as if you're uncircumcised. The point is, it's as if you literally don't have a covenant relationship with God. Because keep observing circumcision, which was part of the law of Moses, it was a requirement under the law of Moses. Even Jesus was circumcised. He kept the law. His family ensured that he was circumcised on the eighth day as the law required. But just the mere keeping of physical circumcision and the violating of the rest of the law profited you nothing. The point is, in order to be justified by the law of God, any law, you have to keep it perfectly. Later on, we're going to study in the book of Romans that it's not the mere keeping of law that brings about one's justification. Now, keeping of law is good, it's required, it's that which you need to do. But the mere rote keeping of law does not justify. The grace of God does. Because no man will keep law perfectly. The Jews did not, the Gentiles did not, and we do not today. But we're required to keep and observe the law, and observe and keep the law as best we can and as perfectly as we can. But the Jew thought that, well, if I'm circumcised, if I'm Jewish, if I have a written and codified law, all is well. No, all is not well. Because they didn't keep all the law. They were breakers of the law. That is the law of Moses. Your circumcision has become uncircumcision. When one's habitual demeanor or behavior is such that he could be described as a transgressor of the law, one is in that condition as if he were not circumcised, as if he had no covenant relationship with God. He was out of fellowship with God because he was a violator of the law. Romans 2 and verse 26. Therefore, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteous requirements of the law, will not his uncircumcision be counted as circumcision? Now, in the next two or three verses, I want to look at some other versions. And I want to do this because in your own study, if you're just using one version of the Scripture, that's all right. But you'll learn so much more if you can compare it to other versions. And I want to point that out with these next two or three verses here. Some are still using the King James Version, and the King James Version renders verse 26 of Romans 2 in this way. Therefore, if the uncircumcision keep the righteousness of the law, shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? We have a few things in this verse, in King James Version, that we could define if we just simply look at some other versions. For example, the New King James Version, therefore, if an uncircumcised man, or the King James Version just says, therefore, if the uncircumcised. If the uncircumcised man, who would that be, as a matter of fact? A Gentile, he's an uncircumcised man. Therefore, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteous requirements of the law. Now, the King James Version, if you're reading from the King James Version, says, keep the righteousness of the law. But that word righteousness there has reference to the righteous requirements, ordinances, commandments, or precepts of the law. The law under consideration is the law of Moses. Consider the English Standard Version. So if a man who is uncircumcised keeps the precepts of the law. The New American Standard Bible. So if the uncircumcised man keeps the requirements of the law. So where the King James Version says the righteousness of the law, it's the righteous requirements, precepts, or commands of the law. Christian Standard Bible. So if an uncircumcised man keeps the law's requirements, will not his uncircumcision be counted as circumcision? So you have a Gentile who keeps the righteous requirements, the righteous precepts. That is the precepts and commands that the law calls for one to keep. If a Gentile kept the righteous requirements of the law, did not steal, did not commit adultery, go through a whole list of laws that one could keep. If he kept those, would his uncircumcision not be considered or counted or reckoned as circumcision? It would be. He's keeping the law. He's keeping the law, although he's not circumcised. You see, the Gentile would be in the same condition as the Jew. The Jew keeps the righteous requirement of circumcision. But the Jew commits adultery, the Jew steals, the Jew robs temples, and so forth. So both the Jew and the Gentile are in exactly the same boat. The Gentile is uncircumcised, but yet he keeps some of the other righteous requirements of the law. The Jew keeps the ordinance of circumcision, but doesn't keep other requirements of the law. Do you see the point? That's the point that Paul is making here. He's trying to show the Jew that they're in exactly the same boat as the Gentile. As a matter of fact, he mentions the Gentile in this context without calling him a Gentile. Romans 2, verse 27, and will not the physically uncircumcised, there's the Gentile, will not the physically uncircumcised, and the King James Version renders that, And shall not uncircumcision which is by nature. Uncircumcision which is by nature is a Gentile. He's not been circumcised. So will not the physically uncircumcised, if he fulfills the law, to fulfill the law is to keep the law, to observe the law, to practice the law. If he fulfills the law, judge you who, even with your written code and circumcision, are a transgressor of the law.
Brother James, does that apply today to Christians? A Christian man is uncircumcised? Is he breaking the law?
No, because the law of Christ does not require circumcision.
Okay, we're still talking under Moses.
Right, yeah. See, the Jew thought that they were in covenant relationship with God because they were circumcised. But Paul's trying to point out that physical circumcision really has nothing to do with a covenant relationship with God. As you pointed out earlier, it's the circumcision of the heart. You see, the Jew thought if they could keep the outward requirements of the law, all was well. But more is required than just keeping the outward requirements of the law. God wants your heart. That's what he wants. And if he doesn't have your heart, then you can go through all the rote routine of keeping outward requirements you want to, and it won't save your soul because your heart is not in it. So verse 27 again, before we run out of time, Romans 2, verse 27, and will not the physically uncircumcised, if he fulfills the law, now fulfills the law here is fulfill the righteous requirements of the law mentioned earlier, judge you who, even with your written code, judge you. Now, so you have a Gentile here who's going to judge the Jew in the day of judgment? No. The Gentile keeps the law. He keeps the righteous requirements of the law. He's obedient to the righteous requirements of the law. When we obey God's command, we condemn others who do not. Our very actions of obedience to God condemns, and that's the idea of judge here, judge or condemns another. So the Gentiles' actions of obedience to God in keeping righteous requirements of the law condemns the Jew. Just as when Noah, in his day, he condemned or judged the people of his day because he was obedient to God, built the ark. Remember on one occasion, Jesus told the Jews of his day that the people of Nineveh would rise up in judgment against that generation. Does that mean those Gentiles of Nineveh was going to judge them? Well, their conduct, their obedience to the preaching of Jonah to them. Remember, they responded in obedience to the preaching of Jonah. But the Jews of Jesus' day were disobedient. So when one is obedient to the God's law, regardless of what law it is, he condemns those who are not. And that's the point that Paul is making here. So the physically uncircumcised, the Jew, if he fulfills the law, the righteous requirements of the law, judge you who even with your written code. Now the King James Version uses the word who by the letter. The word letter here simply means writing. And that's why some of the newer versions render it as written code. It's the written and codified law that is under consideration. Who, even with your written code, even with your written and codified law, remember they put a great deal of pride and glory in the fact that they were the only nation that had a written and codified law from God. So even with your written code and circumcision are a transgressor of the law. So neither one of those things did them any good. They had the written and codified law, and they had circumcision as a sign of a covenant relationship with God, but neither one of them profited them or benefited them because they were disobedient to the law. English Standard Version in Romans 2 and verse 27. Then he who is physically uncircumcised but keeps the law will condemn you, who have the written code and circumcision break the law. New American Standard Bible. And he who is physically uncircumcised, if he keeps the law, will he not judge you who through having the letter of the law and circumcision are transgressor of the law? Christian Standard Bible. A man who is physically uncircumcised but who keeps the law will judge you who are a lawbreaker in spite of having the letter of the law and circumcision. Now the point of reading those, I should have made a chart and put them on the chart so you could see, is if you just have three or four other versions, sometimes it'll make the text much plainer for you. Sometimes it'll define a word for you. And so it's very helpful. Romans 2 and verse 28. We're almost out of time. Romans 2 and verse 28. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. Two things here. He is not a Jew who is one outwardly. What showed him to be a Jew? Well, his circumcision. Showed him to be in covenant relationship with God. All Jews were required by the law of Moses to undergo circumcision. He's not a Jew, a real Jew, a true Jew, a genuine Jew. Remember, they prided themselves in being Jewish. They prided themselves in being a Jew. Well, there's great pride in being a Jew. We're all Jews. We're all Jewish. We're the Israel of God. We're the people of God. But one is not a person of God based on his outward conduct alone. Nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. Now, before we get into the commentary of this, King James Version. For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. Not much different from the New King James Version. English Standard Version. For no one is a Jew who is merely one outwardly, nor is circumcision outward and physical. New American Standard Bible. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. New International Version. A man is not a Jew if he is only one outwardly, nor is circumcision merely outward and physical. Christian Standard Bible. For a person who is not a Jew, who is one outwardly, and true circumcision is not something visible in the flesh. So the reason I read those is like that last phrase, visible in the flesh. Circumcision, merely outward and physical. Outward in the flesh, physical circumcision. So it's not the physical circumcision that is under consideration. We'll have to stop. We're well over. Been good if we could got through the next two verses, but we'll not. Any questions or comments before we end? All right. We'll pick up here then next Wednesday evening in our study. Thank you very much for your kind attention and good comments tonight.